I am Platt on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Cynthia Hopkins joins me now. The internationally acclaimed musician, artist, and composer will be starring in her one-woman show, A Living Documentary, as part of the Push Festival. The show is a tour de force of eclectic, semi-fictional characters portrayed by Ms. Hopkins, who sings, tells stories, dons costumes, makeup, and wigs of men and women she's encountered who know all too well the reality of artistic endeavor. I'll get Ms. Hopkins to tell us about the show and what people can expect on the 5th of February at the Fox Cabaret at 2321 Main Street here in Vancouver. Visit pushfestival.ca for tickets and information. Cynthia Hopkins has received many awards for her work, including a 2015 Doris Duke Artist Award, a 2015 Grants to Artist Award from the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, a 2010 Guggenheim Fellowship, and a 2007 Alpert Award in Theater. She's produced 8 albums of original music, as well as 7 performance works. She's been hailed for her music and her groundbreaking multimedia performance works. She's performed on John Hodgman's Netflix special Ragnarok. Visit CynthiaHopkins.com. She joins me from New York City one afternoon in early January. Please welcome to the Platt Online program, Cynthia Hopkins. Ms. Hopkins, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So for people listening to us who may not know what to expect on February 5th when you're in Vancouver, how do you explain what a living documentary is?
Well, it's kind of a cross between the Tracy Ullman show and a Laurie Anderson piece. It's a musical comedy wherein I play a variety of different characters commenting on the subject of the challenge of earning a living as a performing artist and also, well, as any kind of creative artist, and then also telling the story, my own story of really coming to a decision to let go of a certain approach to that and to make a gigantic life change. So it's almost like a coming of middle age story. In terms of my life as a creator and performer.
The struggle of the artist to make ends meet, suffering for their art, I mean, it sounds like a cliche, but for a lot of people like yourself, that's reality. That's reality for you, for people you know.
I think it's a reality for most people who are artists.
Yeah.
It's a very rare few who kind of do what they want to do and are able to survive from doing that.
So where does survival come from? What have you found has worked for you in terms of being able to do the art that you do, to perform the way you have and as often as you have, and yet, you know, make a living at it?
Well, you know, a big shift for me, and this is addressed in a really direct way in the show, is starting to ask for what I need financially. In other words, to ask for the money that I need to do the work. In other words, to approach it as a business person and to I think part of the issue, a big part of the issue for me, that was a challenge, was that I started out making creative work with no idea of or expectation of ever making a living from it, but then once I started making work in earnest, and it took over my life. In other words, it became a full-time job. And so then when that happens, that's when you come up against the issue of, like, I've either got to make a living doing this, or I need to make a living doing something else while doing this, you know, which is kind of how I started out, like most people start out. You know, I was a waitress, and I was a secretary, and I did other things to make a living, and then I did my creative work in my, like, spare time. you know, but I think particular to the performing arts, but I guess probably true in all the arts, is that, you know, there's this sort of middle ground where you start to get enough attention or enough opportunities that it can, as I describe, take over your life. In other words, it becomes a full-time occupation. But then the finances don't sort of match that necessarily. And so I had to make a decision to approach it as occupation.
Yeah.
And ask for the money that I need to live. Like, there's this sort of idea, and I don't know if this is true where you are, but in the States, like, I ran a nonprofit company for 10 years to produce my work, and, you know, most of the grant, 99% of the grants that you can apply for are project-based, and so that means the idea is that you're getting this money to pay for the lights and the scenery and the other people. You're not getting the money to buy your groceries, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And thankfully, there's a few awards now that have been created in the States very recently that are unrestricted cash grant awards, which means you can use them to live or, you know, buy a house. But,
yeah.
And thank God for those. But there's this kind of, like, idea that, you know, my, like, the nuts and bolts of my living expenses, paying my rent and my paying for food, it's, like, not considered part of the budget.
Right, yeah. So when you approach your work now and looking at it in terms of, you know, as a business person, as you said, does that take away from the creative process, from the actual doing of the work?
I mean, I found it, especially in the making of this show, a living documentary, to kind of have the opposite effect, to be very freeing.
Hmm.
Like, for example, with a living documentary, one of the decisions I made early on, just kind of a rule, and for me, like, the process of making things, it's kind of a sequence or a series of decisions that get made and then inform all subsequent decisions. And so a very early, early decision I made was to not spend a solitary penny on the making of the show. In other words, to use any money that I got for the show, like commissions and fees from venues and residency fees and performance fees, to pay for my living.
Mm-hmm.
And so once that decision, it's almost like restrictions can be more freeing than, you know, empty food canvases. Because that then I was free to do what I could do without spending any money, which is to make monologues and songs and characters, kind of like my own version of a Tracy Ullman show.
Yeah.
And without, you know, I had to use just whatever I already had. I couldn't purchase anything.
Right.
And so any kind of design question was also out the window. So, you know, all of my focus could then just be on the written and sung and sort of character material, which was a joy, you know, yeah. It was a joy for me. And I didn't have to write any grants.
Right, yeah. So when we go to the Fox Cabaret here in Vancouver on February 5th, when we see you on stage and these characters that you'll be performing, that you'll be inhabiting, how many are there, by the way?
Five.
Yeah, and so that's men and women. And
yeah.
Various ages, and I've seen clips of them online, and they're very funny, and it seems like you're having fun on stage, inhabiting those characters.
Yes, yeah, it's my favorite thing.
Yeah,
it was kind of like in a way, the sort of catch 22 is that. You know, some recognition as an artist brings with it pressures, you know, that when you're, you know, like the very, very first show I ever made, I had no expectation that anyone would ever see it. It was like being a kid, you know, with a costume box.
Uh-huh.
But I was doing it for myself and not for any anticipated viewers. And then, as that work got recognition, and then I started to make things with a lot of commissioners involved, then it was like the opposite. And funders as well. It's like then I was kind of in service to all of these potentially critical viewers. And so making this show a living documentary, I mean, for me, I think the comedy comes out of this incredible freedom of almost like being like a little kid again. Because I was letting go of a whole way of doing things. Like I had gotten so burnt out on kind of managing this enterprise of having a company and hiring people and having a lot of designers involved and a lot of other, you know, essentially employees involved. You know, there's like kind of a whole universe that I felt beholden to. And so this show was a total letting go of all that. And so it's kind of a celebration of like, unfettered, like playtime.
Yeah. And so these characters in a living documentary, I mean, they're based on people that you've encountered over the years. Is that right?
Well, some of them are. Yeah. I mean, and then, yeah, some of them are quite directly based on actual people I've encountered. Some of them are much, much more loosely based on people I've encountered. And then one of them is like a version of myself as a very, very young person. When I was really, really angry. I don't think that clip of her, I mean, there's maybe one clip of her online that you can see, but then there's this fat lady and she's like, she's not based on an actual person. She's like, she's like a clown or like really extreme version of sort of a very deep true part of myself.
You know, when I saw a clip of her online, and I found her to be absolutely entertaining, funny, and you know, you can tell from the people that were watching you perform that at the time, just how well liked she was.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, and I guess she sort of says the things that we'd all like to say. Is that where
right.
she comes from?
Yeah, that's exactly where she comes from. Yeah, she's like, I don't know, the id or something like that. It's like the no propriety. Like, what would I be like if I didn't give Can you swear? Can you
oh, absolutely. Sure, yeah.
Oh, okay. you know, if I didn't give a shit what anybody was going to think of me. And so that's kind of like the deepest level of freedom in a way, of expression for me.
Yeah, and so to be able to do that every night that you perform this must be fun, but is it freeing in a way that you're able to say lose the filter that you otherwise would have?
Oh yeah, filter free living. Yeah, it's exhilarating. It's the most fun. It's the most fun thing. I mean, it's, you know, it makes life worth living for me performing that kind of thing. Yeah.
So when you're the only one on stage and you're the only one, say, responsible for putting this show on, what's your day like? I mean, it must seem tiring. Is it at the end of the night?
Yeah, it's tiring. I mean, it's tiring on the road because it's kind of like from the morning up until the performance, I'm just getting ready for it. I mean, you know, setting up all the, like, I got to do all the job, wear all the hats.
Yeah.
All the hats. But as I say, it's also, you know, it's a complete adrenaline rush. And, you know, that's true. I mean, I perform for other people a lot too. And so that's always true for me as a performer, is that there's, you know, a rush of exhilaration and adrenaline. And like a lot of times when I'm performing, I'll get bruises, you know, or I'll notice that I've, like, injured myself. I mean, not seriously, but, you know, and I didn't feel it when it happened. So it's like it's like a natural high.
Yeah.
It's like a natural high, which is great for me because I'm sober.
Right.
And then also I have chronic depression. And so, that kind of exhilaration is a relief, you know. It's a relief from my sort of default setting, and you know that's why I do it. I mean, that's why I do what I do.
Yeah.
With my life.
Yeah. And so, I mean, when you have to explain to people why you do it or what you do, do you find that a lot of people who have, say, 9-to-5 jobs don't understand that? Don't understand the need to perform, say?
I don't know about that. I do know that a lot of people seem to say to me, or the comment that I get a lot that baffles me is that there's a bravery involved, I guess, because I'm talking about personal things and sometimes kind of embarrassing things, like, for example, that it's difficult for, I have found it difficult to earn a living, but for me, you know, bravery means doing something that is scary. And I guess performing in that way is maybe brave, but performing personal, like revealing myself personally in public, to me is not scary. You know, revealing myself on a personal level, rather than a public level would be much more terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, I feel more comfortable communicating to an audience when they're in the dark and there's lights on me than, you know, I do communicating with you right now. So, you know, I just read this book about, it's by a friend of mine, Andy B. Person. She's a choreographer, and it's about dance, actually. But it has this quote from, I think, Balanchine about, like, people would say, why do you, you know, make dances or whatever? Why are you a choreographer? And he says something about a horse, like, horses, you know, they do horse things because they're horses. Like, that's the reason they, you know, they run because they're horses. And so, you know, there's no sort of question about it. And that's kind of like what he's saying, why he does does what he does, it's like it's just an innate, it's like a compulsion, actually.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't think I chose it.
Yeah. And so when you do this show, because, I mean, you've said why you've done it, but I mean, in a way, from the responses that it's gotten from audiences, I mean, they get something out of it that they wouldn't otherwise have gotten if they hadn't seen the show. Do you find that there's something you want to say to the audience about their job in all of this? I mean, they're there every night to watch you perform. But they also have a responsibility in terms of supporting the sort of artistic endeavor that needs to be supported, say.
I don't know. I mean, I think what I would hope is actually that people are inspired to have agency in their own lives and whatever line of work they're doing to... you know, to let go of what isn't working and to ask for the kind of support they need to do whatever they really do have a passion to do. In other words, I hope there's some, because, and I have experienced this, you know, from responses from people who've seen the show that aren't necessarily even people working in the performing arts necessarily. You know, so like this story that I'm telling has to do with my experiences and performing arts, but it's really more of like, in terms of a mythological version of what I'm talking about, it's more like accepting, like realizing that I'm burning out on a certain way of doing things, and rather than trying to like force myself to make something work that's not working, to let it go and try a different way and experience the freedom of that. And so my hope is that that's the kind of like message or spirit that is in the room.
Yeah, and indeed, it's not only an important show, it's an entertaining one at that, from what I've seen. Break a leg, as I say, Cynthia, and all the best as you make your way to Vancouver. Your show's something to look forward to, definitely.
Thank you so much.
CynthiaHopkins.com is the website. PushFestival.ca for tickets and information. A Living Documentary is at the Fox Cabaret on Friday, the 5th of February. Cynthia Hopkins joined me on the line from New York City and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.